Hi, it's Bob from Royal Spa. Soaking in a hot tub full of Epsom salts is the absolute best way to minimize everyday aches and pains. And we know all about Epsom salts at Royal Spa. Royal Spa hot tubs are the only hot tubs on the market that can safely and effectively use Epsom salts. Made right here in Indiana, Royal Spa hot tubs are the highest quality hot tubs on the market. Visit any one of our three Indianapolis locations or visit royalspa.com.
Ah, Royal Spa.
This morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
First half was it was embarrassing. No excuses. We simply have got to come out better, and it was ugly, and we all own it.
Honestly, I think calling it ugly would be a compliment. That was horrific yesterday on both ends of the floor. I guess if you want to celebrate a moral victory for the second half, well, you won't find it for me here on this Monday morning. Ugly, if I could take it a little step further from Rick Carlisle there. Pacers down 1-0. We'll recap a lot of that on today's show. It is also NFL draft week, so plenty to get to on that front. Chris Ballard, I thought, with some interesting comments on Friday at his pre-draft presser. A few things that certainly got my attention. We'll chat about that as well. Good Monday morning to you. I am Kevin Bowen, Mark Dykton on the ones and twos, and Andy Sweeney alongside. Gentlemen, I'd like to start with, did you guys at least have a good weekend before Sunday at 7?
I had a great weekend, and I was waiting around, and I was got the little glass of bourbon and ready for a little college basketball, a little NBA at 7 o'clock last night, and disgusted. A performance that I was not expecting. It's one thing to lose, and it's one thing just to be absolutely the laughingstock of the opening weekend of the NBA playoffs. And KB, you know, I'm looking at a quote right here in front of me from Rick Carlisle right before the game, and he said, "We're just looking forward to competing. We're hungry, and we have a lot to prove." And boy, the Pacers did not look like they wanted to compete for the first half. They did not look hungry, and boy, they looked like they proved nothing good last night. But a good morning to you, fellas.
Yeah, it's funny you say college basketball. I felt like I was watching IU at the rack with how the Pacers first half last night. I mean, it was jittery, nervy, whatever you want to call it. Boy, the first couple of possessions, I almost felt like told you everything you need to know about what was going to happen. You know, Nesmith has the travel. Turner gets like a late clock three and just throws it off the backboard. And I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be ugly half-court offense. And like the Pacers that's not the game the Pacers want to be in. Tyrese Haliburton, incredibly unassertive, if that is a word. And I thought both ends of the floor. I mean, defensively, Andy, there were times where just wide open layups for the Bucks. Guys totally lost for the Pacers on that end. Obviously, defending Lillard was an issue there in the first half. I think if you want to boil it down to one thing, to me, so much of it is what happened when Lillard was off the floor. I mean, you got cooked by the Bucks when Damian Lillard was not out there. That has got to be incredibly frustrating for the Pacers. Some head-scratching lineups. You know, I said it to you all week long. You cannot have Haliburton and Siakam both on the bench together. I thought when you went both of them on the bench together, that's where it really snowballed to end the first quarter. So I get that you can sit here and say, hey, it's one game. It's a seven-game series. But I almost look at it, Andy, and think this series could be pre-Giannis and post-Giannis. And if you believe the reports, there's a chance Giannis returns in the back half of the series. So if you look at tomorrow night, that's your only chance on the road, because you're going to have to steal a road game at some point to win the series. That's your only chance now on the road without Giannis, assuming he's back if there is a Game 5, assuming he is back for that, and then a Game 7, of course. So, yes, I get that, you know, hey, wake-up call, welcome to the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. But, damn, that's a missed opportunity because their star is obviously in street clothes.
Yeah, Giannis was out, and, you know, listen, I think Dame is, he's a great player, he's a Hall of Fame player, and when you let him shoot, just in rhythm shots, and I don't care if they are from far, that's what he does. And I was just really disappointed last night in, quite frankly, everything. And I know after the game, and he's done so, and hopefully we get Rick Carlisle tomorrow. We'll see what happens before game two. And I know that, listen, he's going to look at the competitiveness. He talked about it. He's going to look at the defense and how the offense will come after you play that defense. But quite frankly, I'll go right to Tyrese Haliburton. It's probably as disappointed as I've been with him all season. You said inassertive. Is that the word you are?
Unassertive. I don't know if that is a
listen,
word.
Listen, it doesn't matter. It is today. I mean, I know it's not all about, and again, we'll give you the sound as we go today. Carlisle talked about this. Well, it's not all about, you know, scoring and one guy scoring and everything else. But, I mean, he took 7 shots last night. And we talked about this. Listen, I gave you these stats on Thursday. In April, against playoff teams, he averaged 12 points and 11 assists and shot 25% from 3 against playoff/play-in because the Bulls were in there a time or two. Play-in level teams. And quite frankly, that's what we saw. He's not the type of guy that's going to go out and it's going to drop 35, 40 points. The greatness of him is he runs the team. He scores, but he runs the team and he sets others up. And perhaps his numbers would have been better had they knocked down so many threes. I do want to dive into this as we go that, you know, the glass half full here, KB, is they're not going, you know, Dame's not going to do that night in, night out, although you got to guard him at some point. And you're not going to shoot that bad night in, night out. At least you would hope. But I'm
But it's just a missed opportunity without Giannis.
I'm disappointed.
And what does that do for Milwaukee?
The Bucks never felt the greatness of Tyrese Halliburton last night. Not for 1 second.
And outside of Siakam, name me one Pacer player that feels confident waking up today.
I mean, Nesmith was bad. Turner has been so good.
Milwaukee got some of their others. I mean, Portis was very important. I thought Malik Beasley hit a couple big shots. Even like Crowder and Connaughton come off the bench and hit some timely threes. So, you know, I was such an advocate of like, you've got to get on them game one. Because again, Milwaukee had a little bit of like on the ropes feel to it of like, gosh, this is super uneasy. Their radio analyst was with us on Friday, called it the least optimistic they've been in 6 years entering a playoff series. And now what does that do for them? You know, what is this little jolt of confidence? You know, does that all of a sudden lead to even more of it for you? Yes, it's a long series. I certainly realize that. Hell, there were moments yesterday you were reminded that it's even a long game, 48 minutes. But still, this is such just golden opportunities for you early in the series, assuming Giannis is out for tomorrow night as well. You've got to take advantage of that. And you didn't sniff it. You did not sniff it on either end of the floor. And look around the league. What was the trend in these opening round games? Obviously, the home teams winning all of them. But more than that, Andy, and I saw you put out this stat before the start of the show, these games become a grind.
They just do.
No one is getting out and scoring at the level they did in the regular season. Many of these teams aren't even sniffing that number. The Pacers, season low yesterday in points. And you can point to a lot of these teams in these game ones that had season lows. So how do you look when these possessions get slower? And now they're forcing the ball out of Halliburton's hands. And now some others have got to make plays. And those are huge question marks as you enter tomorrow night.
Yeah, and listen, I have to raise my hand on something. And it's funny, we talked about it, but it was at the end of the show on Friday. You know, the end of the show, it's a feel-good Friday. You were getting ready to leave and go listen to Chris Ballard talk about wide receivers and offensive linemen. But I swear, as of last 30, 40 minutes of the show, KB, we kind of looked at each other and we said, you know, we've only talked about this game and this series through kind of one eye, if you will. We haven't talked about it through the prism of, hey, what if the moment is too big for this Pacers team? Because everything had been through the prism of the Bucks have drama, the Bucks have issues. That's how we talked about it the last couple days. It's the Giannis injury, the Shams update, the Woj update, the soap opera going on there with Damian Lillard. Stephen A. Smith comes out and says Dame don't want to be there. Like, all of this stuff. And then, you know, they had their injuries with the Giannis injury. Dame at one point, you know, Friday, he was a game time decision at one point. And so we did all of this conversation around the Bucks and how they would look and the drama and how this is where the Pacers, who have been so good, 4-1 in the regular season and the plan and everything else, and put a stake in the heart of the Bucks and really now back-to-back seasons make Milwaukee question everything they're doing in the postseason and the way they constructed this team. And we didn't talk about it What if the Pacers don't show up? And it reminded me a little bit. Now, I know Pittman Jr. was out. It reminded me a little bit of the Atlanta Falcons game later parts of the year. Remember, I mean, we almost dismissed Atlanta, how bad they are. Tyler Heineke, they're going to have a new coach, which they did, and everything else. And the Colts went on the road, and what did they do, KB? They laid an egg. And I felt like there was a little bit of that, and I need to raise my hand that we didn't talk about the fact that, hey, maybe the Pacers could go on the road and actually lay an egg. And that's what they did last night, at least in that first half, just being absolutely, completely embarrassed. And then I'll say this as well. This would be my other thing. We have said this about this Pacer team so much. You know, it's going to the fourth quarter, and it's a 12-point game. And the Bucks, obviously, all of the shots that Dame was hitting that were ridiculous shots, they weren't going in the third quarter. You won. I would have to look this up. It was 29-14. I mean, they scored 14 points. You dominated them in the third quarter. It's a 12-point game going into the fourth quarter. They had been like 3.5-4 minutes had the Bucks without scoring. And kind of like, always feel like in these things, you kind of reset things. Okay, we've played as bad a basketball as we can humanly play. We're down 12 going in, which is nothing in an NBA game, going into the fourth quarter, and that 12 became 15, became 18, and it was just over yet again. That kind of disappointed me like a second and third time at the end of the game, that you didn't take that from 12 to 6 and put some game pressure on Milwaukee.
I'll be honest, I'm torn on how much stock to even put in the third quarter. You know, it's one of those, are you up 17 in a football game and you go prevent? You know, if you're the offense, you're like, how about that drive? 12 plays, 80 yards. Well, yeah, you know.
That's called watching Daniel Jones for the last 4 years, KB.
Look at the defensive coordinator and see that, you know, he said to his defense, anything but, you know, get beat. And, you know, keep everything in front of you and burn clock. And I'm probably being too critical and too harsh on it, but basically what I'm getting at is the Pacers got to prove something to me tomorrow night. Like, I can't, like, sit here and be like, you see what happened in the third quarter? Right. There we go. That's what's going to be there starting at 8:30. In game two there. I mean, you bring up that portion of the game, though, and if we do want to focus there for a second, I'll go back to a point I made earlier, and I'll probably say quite often here on this Monday morning, the non-Damian Lillard minutes. I mean, I'm sitting there watching the start of the game, and I'm like, okay, Lillard, been there, done that. I mean, hell, this is Weber State, Portland Dame. We have seen this ability out of him. Yeah, it's frustrating because you didn't see it really in any of the matchups that you had against him. I guess if you want to get nitpicky, Bruce Brown guarded him in a lot of those games. Is that something we should probably bring up a little bit more? Tony East going to join us at 9, so it's a question that I'll throw Tony's way. But more than anything, when he goes off the floor there into the first quarter, and then when he goes off the floor there into the third quarter, that was when it really snowballed both times, really. If you go to the end of the first quarter and the Pacers go all bench, and that was my biggest, you know, issue with Rick Carlisle last week of like, I know that you've had this great bench unit all year long, but depth just doesn't matter as much in the playoffs. It just doesn't. The rotations get shorter. We rattled off all those stars and how big of minutes they played in the play-in game. That's just how things operate in the postseason. And Obi Toppin shoots that three there late in the first quarter when you could back it out and hold for one. And at that point, I think it was like a 6-point game, I want to say. You hold for one there. Milwaukee obviously doesn't get the ball back. Lillard then hits the buzzer beater at the end of the first quarter. And then you leave that all bench unit in to start the second. And again, when Lillard goes off, it starts to grow. And then you just brought up the end of the third quarter when you'd cut it to 12 and whatever. Maybe you have some life.
Right.
If you scored the first couple buckets of the fourth quarter, you know, Doc Rivers is probably taking a timeout. And again, with Lillard on the bench, they then go off again. For those, you know, that look at, you know, plus minus and all that, it's wild to think they were a minus with Damian Lillard on the floor yesterday. They were plus 21 when he was off the floor. That, to me, is everything. Like, you have got to win those minutes, or at least certainly not go minus 21.
Yeah, but that's been the strength of the team. No, they have to win those minutes.
Yeah,
the second unit has been the backbone of this team, have they not?
Right, and again, to me, it's just not all second unit. It's obviously, you know, they leave Middleton, of course, in with their second unit. That's what the Pacers have got to try and explore heading into tomorrow night. So again, Tony East going to join us at 9. We'll definitely sprinkle in some Chris Ballard and draft combo as we are 3 days away from the 2024 NFL Draft. We'll continue our Colts on the Clock series. I did think there were a couple of interesting takeaways from Ballard on Friday. So I want to make sure that we get to that at some point, too.
What was your number one takeaway with Ballard? Just real quick.
So the answer to why haven't you made defensive moves?
Okay.
That was probably the one that had the eyebrows raising the most. And then I thought, you know, his response to how many first-round draft grades they have on players, I think is interesting when you start to look at trade-back scenarios. And then the other one I would go with as well is, you know he loves wideout in this draft. I mean, he's told us that several times now. But, you know, there's another position that he really, really likes, and that's the position, you know, he's always, you know, had a huge affinity for in terms of roster building. Boy, could we see it in round one? Could we see it on the first 2 days? I think fans mostly would be in an uproar if they went that position route. So that one we'll definitely get to at some point today.
Yeah, Tony is going to join us at 9 o'clock. We're going to have to figure things out here over the next. I mean, today it's going to be a reaction day on the Fan. You say you need to see something from the Pacers. I'm just really disappointed in just how they came out. How the conversation around what Carlisle had been preaching, it almost felt like they were in a, this is such an old thing to say. They were reading their press clippings a little bit, that this was going to be easy without Giannis. This was going to be easy. Dame's not right. Dame's unhappy. Dame is this, that, and the other. And then you come out and you get blitz. And again, I go back to, I'm just really disappointed. The team needed leadership last night, and it didn't get any from Tyrese Haliburton. And he has to be better than that.
No, he's got to be much more served. I mean, when McConnell and Turner are, what, having double the shot attempts that he had, that can't be the case. And, you know, Richard says this, and I saw this a decent amount yesterday, Andy, after the game ended. You know, Richard goes, I think we'll be fine. Remember what happened after game one to the Clippers a few years ago, et cetera, et cetera. It's the missed opportunity, and now the margin for error just shrinks so much. Because, again, if you look at it as a pre- and post-Giannis series, if Giannis is out through the first four games, tomorrow night is it in terms of a road game without him.
Right.
And now you've put all the pressure, obviously, for you to win all three of your home games if you want to play it out like that. That's why, again, I try to harp on how massive I thought game one was all last week, because you don't know how long Giannis is going to be out. You know, I said it to you several times, Andy. If you can get the early win, now you put the other boulder on their back, and now you make Giannis feel like he's got a rush back. And now if you're Milwaukee, you probably view it and say, guys, we don't need to try and play Giannis or push it with him until the Pacers prove they can win a game. And is that going to happen tomorrow night? If it doesn't happen until Friday, obviously that gives him a lot more rest time. So that's to where, yeah, do I expect the Pacers not have their worst offensive night
right
here tomorrow? Certainly. But still, it's the margin for error is just shrunk now so much based off the opportunities you have without Giannis versus him possibly returning later in the series.
And it was just so ugly. It was just so disappointing and so ugly. It wasn't a close game. It wasn't right down to the end. You didn't really make them feel any game pressure. It was ugly. I don't know any other way to say it. It was ugly. Tony East coming up at 9 o'clock. What did Rick Carlisle and Tyrese Haliburton say after last night's debacle? We'll get to
whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
That next, your morning check down. Coming up next, wake up call. It's a Monday, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Pretty awful cards for the Indiana Pacers yesterday. We'll talk more about that. Tony East going to join us here. Coming up in about 20 minutes, our Colts on the clock series, though, ramping up Thursday night, the NFL draft. I still want to get to that other position on Chris Ballard's mind here, as one that he feels like has tremendous depth, very quality depth and some high-end talent, not just wideout. Here for this draft cycle. But before we do that, let's hit that Colts on the clock series.
The Colts are on the clock.
All right, right, so we've done this 8:30 of what, for the last week and a half or so. We'll do it leading up to Thursday in the first round of the NFL draft. Hell, we could even do one on Friday, what we think they'll do in round number two. But today, we switch to the wide receivers, and we go with Xavier Worthy, the speedster from Texas. And what's funny, we created this list a week and a half ago or so. Do you think Worthy should be somebody that we even talk about?
Probably not at 15, right?
Probably not at 15, but maybe perhaps if they move back. Now, we had Dane Brugler on a couple weeks ago, and he has like a second-round grade on Worthy. Again, Worthy broke the record running that 4.21 40 at the NFL Combine and being a speed guy. A couple weeks ago, we had the coach on, Rick Venturi, and I found it interesting how much he loves Xavier Worthy. I mean, he really glowed about him. Here's that sound from maybe 3 weeks ago.
My favorite player in the draft is Worthy from Texas, and most people have him down in the late part of the first round, but I could not pass him up. I think he's electric. I know he's small at 165, but you want to talk about taking a game over, explosiveness, a return guy, and now that's even enhanced a little bit, or it's more attractive with the new kickoff rule. He's a punt return guy. The 4.21 is legitimate. It's football speed. I just could never walk by Worthy. That's my editorial.
Could you walk by Worthy? Do you think Chris Ballard will walk by Worthy, whether that's 15 or later on? I should say, Brian Thomas, the LSU wide receiver, we'll get to later in the week. Perhaps, I think we'll probably even kind of break him down tomorrow. Is it Jason Reed of ESPN? I apologize. I had this up
during
the
Reed,
Jordan
right?
Reed, yeah, of ESPN. He actually has Ballard taking Thomas at 15. So we'll get to him tomorrow. But Xavier Worthy, a guy that will be there mid parts, or you would imagine later parts of round number one.
Yeah, I think there's a... Saw Adam Schefter reported today a labrum injury of Brian Thomas, but still, we can get to that here later in the week. You know, the thing about Worthy is speed. Speed, speed, speed. 4.21 at the 40. I mean, we all saw that right here at Lucas Oil Stadium. He had a ton of touchdowns. You know, you think about the return game, certainly could help you out in that area. You know, big yards after catch, and that's something that I've talked about a whole lot. We've even heard the Colts talk about it. You know, at times, not, you know, a ton, but there were moments in the Friday press conference where, you know, Ballard certainly stuck in there, you know, still the need and the desire to add some players and add some weapons around Anthony Richardson. I think the question you would have is just, you know, can the size hold up? He's been pretty durable in college, but, you know, 160-something pounds, does that hold up in a 17-game NFL season over years? And then, you know, exactly what does that fit with a guy like Josh Downs? You know, Downs to me is just such a traditional slot wideout. You know, any sort of smaller wideout, you better have Shane Steichen sign off and like, okay, this is what the usage looks like. So, again, 15 is a hair early for me. Yards after catch is super intriguing, though. And that's where I will not close the door shut on a player like this. You know, Malachi Corley is a guy I've talked about before out of Western Kentucky I really like, so... I understand where Rick Venturi's love, and I would think the Colts would have some intrigue as well.
You know, it's funny. If you look at Texas, what Texas had last year, if you want the smaller guy who's the speed guy, Xavier Worthy is your guy. But again, he's a smaller guy. He's 5'11". He's a 165, okay? Now, if you want a bigger wide receiver, you can go to Texas again. Donnie Mitchell is 6'2". 205. So it's kind of like the other way, right? Texas had both of them. They
and
had
the Colts had the heavy presence at their pro day.
Yeah, I mean,
Steichen, Reggie Wayne, etc.
So again, it might be even, hey, maybe they even look at Mitchell. I think what's interesting about Worthy is, and this is what I try to do, is Xavier Worthy has something that the Colts don't have. And that's a burner on the outside. You mentioned, you know, when you look at Michael Pittman, he's so good between the hashes. He's so good inside. I think Steichen really drawing stuff up for him. You know, Venturi talked about that a few weeks ago with us. But, you know, some of the things he does are almost like a tight end hybrid type of guy. That's the type of greatness that Michael Pittman brings you. And then Josh Downs is very much, like you mentioned, KB, he's very much a traditional slot wide receiver. Well, Worthy is on the outside. He's the burner. He's a stretch the field guy. He's a, hey, Anthony Richardson, you can drop back and kind of let that arm go. Now, the question would be, if you go out and you get a guy like Worthy, it does feel, I don't know, it feels like Alec Pierce doesn't get 100% of the snaps next year.
Well, see, that's where he got.
And I know he's a different player, but I don't know. You tell me. Am I wrong?
Well, see, I think that's a question that I was getting to. You just said it right there. You know, Brian Thomas Jr. on paper, that size is much more similar to an Alec Pierce. Frankly, the size and speed is really similar to Alec Pierce. So are you viewing the wideout draft pick as like, we don't believe in Pierce?
Exactly.
We need to, you know, think about life after him. Or do you look at it and say, no, yards after catch comes in all different shapes and sizes. We just need a dude that can go make plays with the ball in his hands. And, you know, Shane Steichen can fit that. That's kind of where I'm at. I'm more of a, I trust Steichen. I don't care what the size looks. I mean, if you look at NFL guys that are great after the catch, they are very different in size. I mean, hell, Deebo Samuel does not run a very fast 40-yard dash time. But, I mean, he looks like a brute running back out there breaking tackles and running through contact. So, again, these guys can look and really act very differently based off size and speed and their ability to make some plays happen through contact there. So, Worthy at 15, I'd put it very, very low. I mean, I put it like a 2-point something or other. But we mentioned the trade back earlier. You know, if you start to trade back and either you trade back and you make this sort of selection or you recoup a second-round pick, that's where the depth of the wideout class comes into play, and Chris Ballard, of course, is a huge fan of that.
I tend to think you're right. I think Worthy is going to be taken later on. I could even see him get to that second round.
I thought Dane Brugler had him like in the 50s.
He gave him a second round grade, but he, for instance, he had Ricky Pearsall, who played 2 years at Florida with Anthony Richardson. He had him behind Roman Wilson from Michigan, a guy we haven't talked much about. He actually had him behind Keon Coleman. If people remember the Keon Coleman name, the kid from Florida State, I mean, we talked about Keon Coleman a lot right after the season, did we not? That, hey, you know, this would be a first-round guy that potentially the Colts may want. He had a Donnay Mitchell ahead of him. So I would say Worthy is a little lower with Dane Brugler than maybe others.
Yeah, Jordan Reedy has him going 28th to the Bills.
See, I tend to think Worthy's going to end up on a really good team. He's
Bills
gonna end
or
up,
Chiefs?
Yep, bingo. Mm-hmm. He's going to end up back end of round one. Maybe someone, you know, maybe falls to day two on Friday and so somebody moves right up and they grab him there just because that 4-2-1-40, man. You know, teams love that stuff. Teams love that.
We've teased this quite a lot. I think we should get to that other position that Ballard mentioned on the other side before Tony East.
Let's do that. Before Tony East at 9 o'clock, KB wants to hit on this, and I know exactly where you're going. Is there a position out there that Ballard may take that may frustrate everyone in the listening audience? What is that position? We'll do that next.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hour and change to go. Wake up call 93.5-107.5 The Fan.
Yeah, ugly would be a compliment. Horrific from the Pacers yesterday on both ends of the floor. An awful start, swimming upstream majorly from there. Down now 109-94, season low in points, probably the worst offensive night really of the year. For the Pacers, a man that was there and wrote about it on SI.com, Locked On Pacers, always a great listen after Pacer games. He is Tony East. We appreciate him waking up early with us. A little Central Time action on this Monday morning. Tony, your biggest issue from last night would be there. Obviously a lot of tentacles of Halliburton, assertiveness, guarding of Damian Lillard, maybe some substitution questions. The non-Lillard minutes stand out to me. What would you say is the biggest of all?
Yeah, I think the non-Lillard minutes stand out as the thing that went the worst, or at least the biggest missed opportunity to me, right? And among many things. But the fact that, I mean, all season long, the Bucks were terrible when they didn't have Dame or Giannis on the floor. They had neither of them on the floor last night. I think won those minutes by 21 points. I mean, that is where the Pacers needed to take advantage, not only in that first game, but really throughout the whole series. And they just looked atrocious in those minutes. And something that stands out about their game in general, it's that their bench that was so good all regular season and leading up to the series, talk about, you know, can the Pacers rely on this bench? Are they going to break the trope that you can't rely on your depth in the playoffs. Well, that group wasn't good and played too much for a lot of people's liking and couldn't win those minutes with that Dame on the floor. I mean, that was such a missed opportunity for the Pacers in a way that they really needed it.
Tony, boy, there's a I want to go like five different directions with you, but let's settle with this. What is a one-game issue you believe that you saw that bothered you about the Pacers, and what is something that you think is a big-picture issue that could linger this entire series?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the boring one-game issue is the shooting was so bad for the Pacers, but in terms of like an adjustable thing, I thought the way they defended Dame early in the game was really interesting. You know, they were chasing him over screens far from the basket, and I get why they were doing that, try to force him into the big, don't turn him into a passer instead of a shooter, you know, all that stuff, but he just busted up their coverages so fast that they had to adjust right away, and I think that's going to be, you know, a tricky thing as the series progresses. Like in game one of a series, the team that has to adjust first, like you're on the back foot going forward, you got to keep adjusting, you got to be the team that's way more proactive, and that's hard to do. And I think, you know, the way that they, one, you know, chasing it didn't work, but two, struggled with their coverages early against the best player in that game is really tough. It's going to be a big issue for them the rest of the series that, you know, I thought that maybe the Pacers could say, oh, we've got the best player on the floor without Giannis or two of the best three, but they did not last night. And Lillard was a big part, among many things, though, right? Like, you could, I could answer that question in so many ways. In that first half, every single thing they did just didn't look like them at all, right? Their pace wasn't there. The shots they were generating weren't the shots you normally expect from them. Their defensive coverage wasn't right. Their rotation had so many questions. They played 11 guys in the first half, and they needed to. They were playing so bad, they were looking for answers. But it was just all – it was all bad, and they have to figure it out because, you know, you played the soundbite at the beginning. I mean, Rick said it. It was embarrassing, and they have no choice but to own it. That's how bad it was.
He's a great Tony East. That's probably where the great adjective will stop in regards to anything Pacers related from last night. He's with us here after game one. Again, game two tomorrow night, 8:30. That is NBA TV in Bally. So fair warning there for our audience that might have issues in accessing either of those channels. Let's stick a little bit more into the Damian Lillard assignment for the Pacers. Obviously, it was Nembhard. You know, it was a lot of Bruce Brown in the regular season. I kind of forgot that, you know, among the many things that have changed in the last 3.5 months. Would you switch that up? I mean, would you put Aaron Nesmith on him? I get that maybe it's more length, but then obviously you'd have a Chris Middleton question off of that. Did you like what they did in the second half? What did you see differently in the second half? Anything you would change specific to Lillard?
Yeah, I thought the Nembhard idea was the right call to start the series, you know, again, because Bruce Brown did well on him in the regular season, and if Nembhard could neutralize him, especially with that Giannis, like, they can guard straight up a lot easier elsewhere on the floor. Clearly, you know, this isn't all on Nembhard. I mean, Dame was making some ridiculous shots, but, like, they needed to change it up. They did in the like, he didn't score in the second half. I think that says something about what they did from an adjustment perspective, clearly blitzing him, trying to get the ball out of his hands, forcing other guys to score. I think the Bucks were at 43 points in total in the second half, right? Like, they really struggled to find any rhythm after Dame stopped making every shot, every three he took in the game. But, you know, I saw some Portland people who covered Dame for years talking about this during the game, like, especially in a postseason setting. You know, they were thinking, you got to have some size or length on him, especially if he's rolling like that. Like, I remember back to some of his iconic moments in the postseason, and just for example, I know he made this shot, but like, Paul George guarded him in that Thunder Portland series that was so crazy years ago. Like, maybe just because, you know, if he's hitting like that and he's seeing space all the time, even with somebody in his face that he can just shoot over, maybe they do have to go to Nesmith on him right away to start a game or earlier in a game and then figure out how to guard Chris Middleton in another way. Maybe they just try Nembhard on him and see if it works. Maybe they have to make a lineup change if they're going to defend Lillard with more size, because, I mean, he was seeing tons of – it's not even that he wasn't, like, totally uncontested, but he was just seeing a ton of space no matter who was on him or no matter how much space he had in front of him in that first half last night. And if he can play like that and finish plays in that way, you know, you're going to lose every game, right? He was unbelievable. So they I mean, I was Googling the playoff scoring record during the game last night. That's how good his first half was. The answer is 63. He did not score in the second half, obviously. But I think getting size on him would be the answer, because clearly what happened last night was untenable for the rest of the series.
Again, he is Tony East here on our airwaves quite a lot. Pacers now have lost 10 straight playoff games, certainly spanning several years. Wow. With that, they will try to even the series up 1-1 coming up tomorrow night. I want to go on the flip side to the other point guard, and that would be Tyrese Haliburton. And I honestly am looking for elementary education from you more than anything, okay? And I'll bring up the usage rate of Tyrese Haliburton yesterday, Tony. So the usage rate for Haliburton in the regular season against Milwaukee was like 21, 25, 25, 27. Yesterday, it was a season low 11.1. I am one of these people, and for me and our audience out there that knows very little of what goes into usage rate, could you explain what that number of 11.1 means?
Well, some stats actually track it differently because, you know, some places can track literally how many touches players have during a game, and some sites use usage rate as how many possessions do you finish, whether that's with a shot yourself, a turnover, drawing a foul in that way. And the second one, the one I just described with finishing the possession, is the most commonly used form of usage rate because that is typically what stars do. They finish possessions, right? So it's easier to kind of quantify how often a guy is, you know, being the guy for a team. And Haliburton was not doing it very much last night, that's for sure. Seven shot attempts, by far one of the lowest he's had this season, especially with the minutes he played. And, you know, I was looking back at even some of the Bucks games that he had during the regular season, like in that in-season tournament game that's now, you know, of course, going to be a very commonly discussed moment for the Bucks with him looking at the fake watch. Right? He took 19 shots that night, right? He took 20 against them in early January when the Pacers beat him, right? Like, he was just getting him up. He could find space to score. His usage was high. And he was obviously a very efficient player back at the time pre-injury, and you know, it was worth it for him to take as many shots as possible. But that's why, you know, that was a stunning thing to me last night. Seven shots for him is shockingly low. I get the way the Bucks were defending him, but from a usage perspective, they did not want him to finish plays, and he didn't. He was not the guy trying to conclude a possession, and that really hurt the Pacers. They're off. There's a reason they only scored 94, lowest of the season by a lot.
Yeah, I think the word is assertive. Why was he just not assertive? And what can they do? What can Carlisle do to get him in better position to either make a play or to get a clean shot off?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it felt like in the second half, you know, he was seeing two guys a lot throughout the game, right? They would come out as soon as he got a ball screen, he'd see two, and he'd get it out. And he's so naturally pass first. And the bigs were the guys, I think, that ended up benefiting from the way he was being covered. Like, Turner got open for a ton of shots. I think he took 15 or 16. Jalen Smith had a lot of openings, and those two were not efficient at all. I think Turner 5 for 17, and Smith missed all his shots. So I think his night would have looked better if the guys he was passing to made those, and he had, you know, 13, 14 assists, because he was getting it out when he was seeing two guys. But I will say that, you know, even beyond that, it did feel like a lot of times he wasn't even looking at the rim, and was just trying to distribute, trying to execute the game plan. Like, Haliburton, I think he knows this, and he said this a lot throughout the season, including even last year. Like, sometimes him just trying to find his shot, and maybe not quite force it, but, you know, self-created himself, is the best thing for the Pacers offense. Like, he's efficient when he gets into the paint. He's efficient when he self-creates a three. He just needs to try to do that, right? Be a star who can make a moment for yourself. And that's when I think, you know, you talk about being assertive. That's what they've got to do. And then after the game, Miles Turner said, you know, him and Siakam were talking about, they've got to find ways to get him, you know, the shots he needs, whether that's via screens, whether that's making sure they get him the ball when he's open. I mean, now it's been talked about a lot, but T.J. McConnell had that possession where he took two threes, and on the second one, Haliburton was wide open right next to him off the side. Like, those kind of things, the ball's got to get to him. So it's a team thing too, but they've got to get him more involved because he wasn't bad, I would say, but they can't win if that's what he is in a game.
Yeah, Pacers debacle last night. Pacers and Bucks back at it. Game 2 tomorrow here on the Fan. Tony East joining us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. You can catch his stuff Locked On Pacers podcast, Forbes and SI. Tony, I don't know, man. Do you look at any of this glass half full that Dame is not going to be Dame maybe in that first half, and they're not going to simply miss that many shots? And I'll throw this on top of it, and I know you ask about this post game. Maybe they go away from sitting Siakam and Haliburton at the same time, which we saw last night as well. Is there any glass half full stuff that you could buy into after last night's debacle?
Look, I was a little surprised they did that too, which is part of why I asked about it. But, like, it's not without merit, right? That lineup was really good in the regular season and worth trying, but it was too long, obviously, and they got smoked in those minutes, which started the Bucks avalanche. But, you know, I think that if you were to be a glass-half-full person after the game last night, like, they cut it to 12 in the second half. They had some momentum going. They looked like themselves to me in a lot of the third quarter. And what I mean by that is, like, they were playing with pace. And I don't remember exactly what the moment was, but the Bucks scored, actually, one of their rare baskets in the third quarter. And I remember, I think it was Aaron Nesmith, sprinted out to get the ball out of the net, hands it to the ref, and they tried to run up the floor, and they treat it like a transition opportunity. Like, that's when the Pacers were so good during the regular season and so threatening, is when they played with pace in that way, get it across half court by 20 seconds, play fast, play random on offense. That's what makes them so tricky to scout and defend. And they looked like themselves in that quarter, right? And of course, it helps when your defense is actually effective and you could play in transition more. But I think the fact that they had a full quarter and really a half, they were better in the second half than the Bucks were. They looked good and effective is something that they can say, if we do that, right, if we don't have the early first playoff game jitters for a lot of our guys, if Dame Lillard isn't making every single shot to start a game, and we don't start, what was it, over 13 from three, you know, we feel like they probably think, oh, we feel like we could win. You know, we found successes late in the game. Now we have more experience. But, you know, losing a game without Giannis, now you're on the back foot adjustment-wise the whole series. It's hard to feel good about that game, of course, but finding those successes in the second half, like holding Dame to zero, Siakam was terrific, you know, just a lot of, like, low-hanging fruit improvements with, you know, the rotation, too. I think that they have to feel like, okay, the path for us to win is obvious, and I think that's something to at least feel good about, even though that path was, you know, there in the first half in the game one, and was not at all a part of their success in that half. And they were down 30 by halftime. So it's hard to feel good about a game where you're down 30 that quickly, but at least in the second half, a lot of stuff that they can go, yeah, if we do that for 48 minutes, we will win, or we feel really good about our chances.
Tony, what I'm torn on, I know you're not a huge football guy, but I would say, you know, most of our audience probably is. You know, how much of that is you're down 24 in the fourth quarter and they're playing prevent defense and you go 80 yards and you score a touchdown? Like, it's probably not the exact comp, but I don't know. I'm just a little torn on how much of that third quarter is, like, unquestionably real, and that's going to be a huge indicator of what game two looks like.
Well, and to back that point up, you know, when they cut it to, what was it, 12 at the end of the third quarter, like, the moment it was close enough that I thought, okay, maybe. Well, then the Bucks were just way better to start right. The fourth and put it away and got it back up by 20, right? So they just put their foot right back on the gas. And that was a moment that was another standout, like, rotational thing to me. They didn't have no Siakam or Halbert on the floor, but it's been a topic all season. That early fourth quarter bench group was routinely beating other team starters, and that would, like, put a game away for the Pacers. Well, in this game, it was the bench versus the Bucks starters on the fourth, and Milwaukee was way better and put the game away, right? So a lot of stuff that is like, hey, the regular season's different, and the Pacers found out the hard way last night as they got crushed. And I think there is something to what you're saying, yes.
Tony, take a nap. We appreciate the time. I know it was probably a late one last night and a little early here on this Monday morning. So thank you very much. Coverage outstanding as always. Tony East, LockedOnPacersSI.com. Thank you, Tony.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.